Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast.
At Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Practicing basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success, so you know something I can really do this.
Welcome back to the Unconquered Podcast here on Seminole Sports Radio. This is your host, Jason Staples, long overdue since part one of the post-spring wrap-up, looking at the spring game and what we learned from the spring. Had to stop that one about midway through and then take something of an involuntary vacation between then and now to before I could get to part two. That first one talked through mostly offensive stuff, looking at the quarterback, looking at the offensive line and wide receivers. Basically, the first three of the aspects that I look at as keys for the 2017 season. Essentially, as I mentioned there, I came out of the spring game more optimistic than I'd anticipated. My sources had been fairly pessimistic about the offensive line in particular. And again, there's no shame in struggling against Florida State's defensive line, but my sources were not super optimistic. As you can go back and listen to that first part of this wrap up if you'd like for more on that. But basically, I came into the spring with several keys that I thought would be critical for 2017, several questions that this team needed to be able to answer to get to where they expect to go, where Florida State fans hope they go in 2017. And talked about the first three of them, really, in that first podcast. And going back through, number one was improvement at quarterback. Is DeAndre Francois going to process more quickly, get the ball out of his hands more quickly so he's not beat up in the same way that he was last year? Is he gonna fully understand where he needs to go with the football and be able to get the ball out, particularly on first down, and take the free stuff? Or, you know, as I tell my quarterbacks, you know, just take the candy, take it when it's there. And is he going to be able to do that consistently and complete those easy passes that teams will give Florida State on first down as they're trying to stop the Florida State running game? Is he going to be able to do that more consistently in 2017 than he did in 2016, which then sets up a lot more manageable down and distance situations and situations where he's much less likely to take the beating that he did in 2016? It also, you know, helps you to get the ball out more quickly and to get things out on time and make sure that your footwork and all that's taken care of. Is he going to make those improvements? Talked through a lot of that on the first one. Talked through the second key for 2017, as far as I can see, is finding the right mix, the solutions on the offensive line. Talked about what we saw in the spring game, along with what my sources during the spring had said. To briefly summarize that, I think we have a pretty good idea of what Florida State has going into the fall and can kind of pencil in some starters at this point. The real questions were starters at left tackle and at center, with Eberle coming back from injury. But my sources have been adamant that the center position, at least, is pretty close to getting answered, and that they're expecting Bavion Johnson, the redshirt freshman, to take over at center. Even if Eberle comes back, it looks like Johnson is the odds-on favorite going into the fall, and every indication in the spring game was that Johnson lived up to that billing. And I think he has a long way to go still. He needs to get a little bit more consistent, but he was reliable with his snaps and his steps. And as far as I could see, and again, I'm not there in the huddle for every play call, but the calls look good. So overall, that's a pretty good sign. Now, it's a pretty big step up, even from Florida State's defensive line. It's a pretty big step up from the vanilla type stuff that you get in a spring game to playing Alabama and all the stuff that they're going to throw at you up front. And the center has to be responsible for those calls. So, you know, that's something that he still has to work through. But odds on favorite is Bavion Johnson at center. And then Josh Ball looked like a solution at offensive at left tackle. Yes, he does have to get more refined as a pass blocker, but as a run blocker, he was surprisingly effective. And as a pass blocker, the one guy he struggled to block was Derwin James, which, again, there's not a whole lot of shame in that, given what we've seen from Derwin in the past. So overall, offensive line looked better than I expected. Still going to have to find a good mix and find what they want, but overall pretty good. Again, a lot more discussion of that on the first one. And then talked about a lot of wide receiver-related stuff, about expectations for this group and how important it is that they stay healthy and so on. And I continue to believe, based on what I've been told, that the number one wide receiver next year, that the guy that's going to sort of set the tone for that group is Keith Gavin. He obviously hasn't had the opportunity really to show a whole lot on the field in games yet to this point. But if he's healthy in the fall, I expect Gavin to be really the number one, followed by Nooney Murray and Auden Tate as a really solid set of three, with a very good fourth option if he's healthy as well, and George Campbell. So again, we didn't see a whole lot of them in the spring game, but talked a lot about that and about those options and what we can kind of expect going into the fall in that last podcast. Now, to pick up then, the next few things that really I thought Florida State needed to do coming into the spring and going into the fall, going into the 2017 season, the other big thing, there were really two other big keys, so I had five. The other two were, number four, fill the holes on defense. Are you going to be able to fill the gaps where you lost some key contributors, and particularly some key leadership on the defensive side of the ball, particularly at defensive end, at that strong side defensive end? What are they going to do there? Are they going to be able to find a good combination of bodies that's going to be able to do what to be able to compensate to account for the loss of DeMarcus Walker, second round draft pick? There's a lot there, and you know, I was told in the spring by those who were watching practice, don't worry about the strong side defensive end. And listen, DeMarcus was really good. Don't want to say anything, you know, in terms of that. He was really good. He was able to do a lot for us. But you're going to really like what you see. You're going to really like, you know, the options we've got there. And when it came time to see that in the spring game, I have to say I was positively pleased by what I saw at that strong side defensive end position. Now, there is still a lot of discussion about what Florida State's going to do with that strong side defensive end position. Obviously, Josh Sweat was out for the spring game, so we really weren't able to see, you know, the full defensive line and the front in terms of what Florida State plans to do there. Plus, guys were split up, obviously. But there's still a lot of discussion among the those who cover Florida State and among a lot of the internet fan base, basically expecting Josh Sweat to be the starting Sam defensive end, and Burns to be the weak side defensive end in the base package. But frankly, I just don't see that. And really, that's not in line with Jimbo Fisher's preferences in terms of how to run his defense. Because again, that makes you pretty small on the edge. Josh Sweat, obviously very strong, can play that strong side defensive end. It's not about Sweat not being able to do it. The problem is it's about Burns being way undersized for the base Will defensive end. That's the problem for that weak side end. I just don't expect Sweat to be an every down player as a sophomore. I still expect him to have largely a pass rush role. He'll be on the field more than he was last year, but his role will still be more or less that of a pass rusher. So the question is, who's going to be the strong side defensive end opposite Josh Sweat, who will be more than likely at that Buck linebacker or Will defensive end on first down and on neutral downs? That's what I expect to see from Florida State. I expect to see Josh Sweat where he was last year. And then the question is, who do they replace DeMarcus Walker with in those neutral downs? Now, on passing downs, I expect to see some very different things. I expect to see Sweat either slide inside, which he did some last year, or slide to the other side, to that strong side defensive end side, or, you know, just put Burns in on that side, whatever. They're going to move those guys around a lot once you get to longer yardage. And you're going to get Burns on the field. You're probably going to get both Burns and Jacob Pugh on the field on those third down and on those longer yardage plays where you've got some pass rush stuff to do. You're probably going to see a lot of that. You're going to see, you know, that dime rabbit package that they like to run. You're going to see a lot of different packages there, a lot of different personnel options that they're going to be able to play with. And that's, you know, even more magnified by the addition, again, of Derwin James back to that defense. But essentially, the real question is, again, going back to that, who's going to play on neutral downs? Who's going to play on first downs? Are they going to have somebody that can take, you know, are they going to have a couple guys that can reliably take, you know, 200-300 snaps neutral downs a piece to be able to hold up against the run and provide some pressure when it's, you know, against play action and things like that on first down, you know, first down and 10, second down and 6, you know, these sorts of things. Are they going to be able to do that? And every indication that I saw in the spring game is absolutely a yes to that. I was very pleased with what I saw. I mean, I think we're going to see Wilkerson probably as the, He's at this point, I would consider him the leader in the clubhouse to be the starter at that spot. But Janarius Robinson also looked really, really good. J-Rob looked, you know, listen, the guy, we've talked about him on this podcast before as a guy that has first round physical ceiling. It's just he came in super raw and he flashed that ceiling. He flashed a little bit of that in the spring game. Still needs to learn a little bit more what he's doing, but you know, he's gaining some weight. He's, you know, well over 250 pounds at this point. And that puts him in a position to be able to contribute at that spot as well, especially with the burst that he showed in this game, in the spring game. Now, again, Wilkerson at 280 plus pounds gives you basically what Fisher wants out of that position on the neutral downs. And that's why I expect to see him be the primary guy there. And he was a load. He played with good leverage, was able to do more or less what he wanted on that edge. And again, it's a little tricky because of who he's going up against at different points at that tackle position and so on. But the indications were good. And Josh Kando was also good. Again, early enrollee, bit of a puppy in terms of, you know, the paws are a little big for the body yet, but again, another guy that by the time you get to the middle part of the year, you're looking at a guy that's able to take some reps and able to make a meaningful dent in the rotation to help keep you more rested across the board and be able to get guys playing harder and not taking snaps off, which is a big deal. So, you know, overall, I thought that group looked pretty good. And again, I think at that strong side end position right now, I would probably expect it to go 1, Wilkerson, 2, J-Rob, and then 3, Kando as the strong side guys, with Sweat probably moving over there some on passing downs much more. So overall, pretty pleased with what I saw there. The other holes on defense, you know, they lost a quality, again, a draft pick at that field corner position. Are they going to be able to replace Marquez White with somebody else that was going to be able to meet that level of play? And all indications from what we saw in this spring game is that it's going to be a war for that spot. They've got multiple guys who probably are going to be an improvement over what White was as a senior. And, you know, again, he played reasonably well. He didn't play as well as a senior as he did as a junior, but he played reasonably well as a senior, well enough to get drafted, and indications are pretty good that they're going to be better at that position than they were in 2016. So not bad there. Otherwise, you know, there's a whole lot of stuff to be excited about on that defensive side. I mean, one of the things that is maybe most striking is I got in a text about this before the spring game that, you know, Nate Andrews coming back for that extra season of eligibility, he might not play very much in 2017. He's having to fight hard for PT, for any PT, not for a starting job, but as good as he's been in the money role in the past. You know, he's been a guy think about this, on the 2013 national championship team, as good as that defense was, Nate Andrews was a pivotal, a crucial contributor on that 2013 team in that money role, produced a number of turnovers. His flexibility to come in there and be that kind of hybrid guy in that money role was a big deal for that 2013 team. And he may not be able to get on the field even at that role with this team as a much more experienced and better player than he was in 2013. He may not be able to even get out there for that position all that much in 2017. That tells you where this defense is, where that back seven is in terms of its talent, particularly the back five, the secondary back six when they go with that money roll. Because, I mean, who are you gonna sit for him? That's the question. And basically what I was told is the young guys, the sophomores in particular, really started to flex their ability in this spring and started to get it. That was one of the real positives, is that younger group in the secondary really took a step forward in the spring. And, you know, who are you gonna sit for him? Because all of those guys are more athletic. All of those guys are a little, you know, a little bigger. You know, the guys that are comparable position are bigger. So, you know, here's the thing. When you get past the first half, when Trey Marshall is ludicrously suspended for the Alabama game, once you get past that, yes, Ermin Lane struggled in the spring game, no doubt about it, but he had barely practiced during the spring, was rusty, was still coming back from that foot injury. He will be fine. I expect him to play more or less starter minutes in the fall. He'll do the work and get what he needs done in the summer. But basically, let's say we go into we see Florida State go into a dime situation. What guys do you have on the field? I think McFadden obviously is going to be one corner. Let's say you put your other two corners are going to be Levante Taylor and Kyle Myers. Those are going to be your three corners in a dime package, and then you got your two safeties. You're going to go with Marshall, and obviously Derwin James is going to be on the field, but the question is where. But let's say you can go Trey Marshall and Ermin Lane at the safeties, because that maximizes your range, maximizes your size and physicality and all that. Then you can put Derwin James in that money role, and you can let him be the one to kind of rove around and be able to freelance a little bit from that role. Well, yeah, that would explain why it might be tougher for somebody like Nate Andrews to get play, to get reps at that particular position. I mean, think about it. Derwin James or Nate Andrews at that spot. That's the kind of thing that they've got. And now the real concern, I think, defensively is still at that linebacker position. You know, right now it's not clear that they're going to be able to count on Matthew Thomas. And again, he's been one of those guys through his career. They've not been able to count on him at any given point. If Matthew Thomas plays anything like if he's out there and he plays anything like he did in the last few games of 2016, then this defense can be really, really, I'm talking about lights out, ridiculous quality. But with him being, you know, you kind of have to think of him as an addition rather than as someone you can totally depend on going into next year. The linebacker position is still a concern. And, you know, we saw that in the spring game. There's some guys that need to make sure that they're in the weight room or on the treadmill or wherever else, running stadiums and so on, making sure that they're in a little bit better shape, making sure that they understand what they're doing a little bit better. Linebacker position still needs to get more reliable for this defense to be what it should be. And again, if Matthew Thomas is healthy, if he's out there, if he becomes reliable, that becomes much less of an issue. Then they can let Derwin James kind of rove around and do what Derwin James does. In the absence of that weakness at linebacker then becomes something you have to start to compensate with some of those secondary guys, and that ends up becoming something of an issue. It takes away some of your ability to maximize the talent that you have in the secondary, because you're using them to plug holes rather than to make plays. And that's one issue that I think did come up in the spring game that they need to make sure that they take care of, that needs to be addressed, there needs to be continued improvement over the summer there. But overall, I mean, the defense, I think filled the holes that I expected them to fill, but better maybe than expected, given what they're losing. Now, the real question is going to be leadership on that side. You know, again, DeMarcus Walker provided a good bit of leadership there. Marquez White, multiple-year starter, leadership out there. They have some space that needs to be filled there, though getting Derwin back in that respect also helps a great deal. The fifth thing, though, so moving on to number five, the fifth key for 2017 that I had down for the spring going into the fall and into camp is for this team to develop an identity, to develop sort of who they're going to be. There needed to be some retooling, again, some development of leadership and some sense of what this team's going to be. You know, are they going to be, that run heavy team? Are they going to be, what kind of team is this going to be on both sides of the ball? And I think for one thing, the spring game also again showed that if nothing else, Jimbo Fisher knows what he wants this team to be. And not just the spring game, but as we talked about in the last episode, the spring in general, the way that he ran such a physical spring with so much short yardage and goal line and all that stuff, trying to really build the physicality of this team, it's pretty clear that they have that this staff has a vision of what they want this team to be in terms of identity. And so I think that's a big check mark at this point. Provided, you know, the key guys stay healthy and so on, this team, I think they've got some sense of what they want to be. I think basically if you hybridize 2012 Bama with 2012 Florida State with a little bit more balance and more 21, more two tight one back packages and some, you know, two tailback packages on the field, that's what this team's going to be. Jimbo Fisher, I think it's very clear that Jimbo Fisher knows that this is a pound the rock team, that it has to be a pound the rock team. He's not going to win just dropping back and throwing 50 times a game, throwing it around the yard like you could with Jameis Winston. He's not going to win doing that with sophomore DeAndre Francois. What he's got to do is he's got to come in and have teams worried about that 230-pound running back Jaquez Patrick, the 210, 215-pound true freshman Akers, and that whole stable of running backs, Green, all the way down the line, Rasul. He's going to want teams to be worried about that, stopping that, and then come out and throw some play action on first down when he can get good numbers and take some free stuff on first down, yes. But what's the dominant identity? It's turning and giving it to those running backs. And again, it's a little bit different than the identity with Dalvin Cook, where you're run dominated, but it's really more big play dominated from the running back position. In this case, it's more of a we're run and expect to get, you know, chunks of 5 and 6 yards with Patrick and get some big plays, yes, from Akers and the rest, but much more of a pounding the football team. And frankly, this offensive line looks like it's going to be built pretty well for that. And you think about this being the identity, that also accounts for why my sources in and around the program are suggesting that that Bavion Johnson is the most likely candidate to start at the center position. Both Ball and Johnson showed that they're ahead of the curve in terms of run blocking, even though, you know, each one of them has a little ways to go in terms of pass blocking. Well, if you become a pound the football team, you can maximize that, and it also encourages you to play those guys at this point. So, I think it's very clear that Fisher knows what he wants this team to be. That he wants it to be a pound the ball team. Again, going back to what they did I think they're a good example of what to expect is what they did in 2012 with EJ Manuel at quarterback. And I think EJ is in a lot of ways the most similar quarterback to DeAndre Francois that Fisher's had at Florida State. So expect a similar approach, only with a better stable of running backs and so on at that, behind him. Once Chris Thompson went down in particular, but think about, especially early year Florida State, when they still had Chris Thompson and what they were able to do running the football in that 2012 season. I think that's much more of what you're going to see, only more 11 or more 21 personnel, less 11, less single tight end, one back, and certainly less four wide, even though they'll be able to do that. But they'll go big. They'll go jumbo with that double wide or double tight and then put both Tate and Gavin on the field and be able to really run the football with that set. I mean, you think about, you put those two tight ends, each of whom's over 250 pounds out there, with Patrick in the backfield at 230, and then two 220-plus pound wide receivers, that's a team that can block you. That's a team with some length, some size to be able to block across the board, and then some big backs to be able to tackle. I mean, this is the kind of offense that Fisher ran back at LSU. And that's really what I think he's been trying to get to. I mean, going back to my conversations with him, even back when he was an offensive coordinator before he was a head coach, that's what he's been trying to get to at Florida State from the beginning. But you got to recruit to it. You got to be able to get the personnel there. You got to be able to do those things. And of course, he wants to be flexible. He wants to be able to run out there in 11 personnel or go four wide and still have playmakers out there. So he's not going to get roped into just one thing. But the identity, I think, is going to be pretty clear in this season. Now, the really interesting thing to me is, knowing that, how does he plan to game plan against Saban and Alabama in that first game? Because the general rule of thumb is you're not going to ground and pound Alabama. You don't want to take them to you want to win standing up against Alabama. They want to take you to the canvas and they want to roll around and ground and pound, because generally speaking, they've had that advantage. Question is, does Fisher think that his team can actually ground and pound this Alabama team? And if so, that could be really interesting to see. I mean, we've talked about this already on this podcast since the new year. Looking at the two rosters, this may be the first time this is the first time in the last few years that I can remember Alabama going into a game where they probably do not have the better defensive line. And again, the Florida State staff knows this. Now, that doesn't mean, though, that Alabama's defensive line isn't great. That doesn't mean that they're not going to be really, really good. You're still going to have to be, you're not matching up your defensive line against their defensive line. The problem is you're matching up your offensive line against their defensive line either way. And the question is, can they ground and pound Alabama? Even if that's your identity, can you do it? Now, my view is that I expect them to run a lot of 21 personnel, a lot of two tight, one back type stuff against Alabama, and to throw on first down out of some of that. A lot of boot type action, a lot of stuff to use those tight ends and use those big receivers on the edge, and then try to run the football a lot on second down and on third down, which helps you not turn the football over, first of all, which is where Bama's really, you know, really destroyed teams. Is, you know, you turn the football over against Bama and you're in trouble. But I think what Fisher's probably going to do is come out in some of those big packages and run some controlled passing game on first down, take a few shots on first down, but be much more of a second and third down running team and try to pound that Alabama team, that Alabama defense, on second and third down, rather than doing what, you know, say LSU did, where they tried to run the football down their throat on first down and then wound up in longer yardage on second and third down. And, you know, then that Alabama defense is playing with leverage the whole way. I think Fisher's going to try to reverse that. I expect that Saban knows that. But that's going to be the interesting thing for me to see, is sort of how they're going to do that. We'll talk about a lot about this as we get a little further into the offseason. But you know, just some preliminary thoughts coming out of the spring game about sort of where Florida State's going. Now, for this final piece of this long-awaited part two, I'm basically going through a series of quick hits that stuck out to me in watching the spring game, and also some things that were communicated to me by my various sources that then I was able to see yay or nay on in the spring game as well. First quick hit is obvious. In my notes, I've just got Akers! Yeah, that guy's pretty good. By this point, you know, I don't think anybody out there really needs to hear a whole lot more about it. But Akers is better at this point than and has a higher ceiling at this point than Dalvin Cook did at the same point in his career. This is a guy I do not expect to be to take the first snap against Alabama, but he probably I expect him to potentially get the most carries against Alabama. Now, there were a couple ball security concerns, and you could see that on his high school tape too. When he's running downfield, you could see him kind of moving that arm a good bit with the ball, and so not keeping it as high and tight as he needed to. And that showed up a couple times in the spring game. And my concern there is, as soon as you see that as an opposing coaching staff, if you're at Alabama and Nick Saban and his army of quality control coaches, you're already working that into the scouting report of every time Akers gets the football, you're going to spend extra. You're telling your defense to go extra at him to try to strip the football. So by those two fumbles that he had, the one went out of bounds on the near the goal line with a big stick down near the goal line. But with the two fumbles that he had, one lost in the spring game, that's something that I'm absolutely certain is going to affect how Alabama defends him, and that's just going to make his life tougher, because if you don't have those fumbles in the spring game, then Bama basically treats you as a talented freshman back, but they're not necessarily going out of their way extra to try to strip you of the football every time you're in traffic, which I'm sure they're going to do now. So that is one concern. That's something I'm sure he's going to be working on all summer, running with the football, running, keeping it high and tight and all that. Now, second thing, in terms of my quick hits, my quick notes, they used a lot more 3-4, 4-3 base stuff in this defense, especially in this spring game, especially on first down. They used that's basically the package with we come into the season, that would be Josh Sweat at that buck position, and instead of having a fifth defensive back on the field, having Jacob Pugh at that Sam linebacker position to be a little bit bigger to match up. So they ran a lot more of that, even against three wide packages and things like that in this spring game than they had in the last couple years. And again, especially on first down. Now, the interesting thing is when they were in the 3-4, 4-3 stuff, they got gashed, which tells you something about what Florida State has in terms of the potential in the running game. Because that's a deep defensive line. That's a deep set. Now, that says something about the linebackers, and it says something about the Florida State running game. And the question is, I mean, how much of each? But they did use a lot more of that. I expect to see a little bit more of that next year again because of how good Jacob Pugh has been. And, you know, that basically means Pugh becomes the star against the teams that are not running a lot of spread, not running as much spread stuff on first down. And in the last few years, you know, going back to when they had LaMarcus Joyner at that position in 2013, they would play essentially nickel personnel, 4-2-5 base against I formation with a tight end personnel. They were going to say these are our best 11. Well, I think this defense is going to be, again, they're going to substitute a little bit more as they're able based on down and distance. And I think they're more willing to say, no, our best 11 is Jacob Pugh on the field at that star and only four defensive backs, which is interesting because, again, defensive back is the strongest overall unit on the team, at least arguably. You can argue for the defensive line as well. So yeah, and now the other thing, the third thing that I've got down, already talked about a good bit here. Linebacker is a significant concern. Djax didn't look all that great. He's got some work to do in the summer, and I think he knows that based on what he's said and been doing on social media. And the others have to develop. I mean, they've got to actually be in the right spots. Now, again, Derwin can help coming down into the box there and all that, but you know, when you're playing Alabama, you want to make sure you have your linebackers up to snuff, because they're going to test your linebackers. That group of big backs, that group of tight ends and so on, they're going to put a test on your linebackers, and it's harder to compensate at that position against them than anybody else. Fourth observation, Stanford Samuels Jr. is really, really, really good. I mean, I thought coming out of high school, he was top two or three corner in the country. You know, he got dinged some for being hurt coming out of high school, sort of unfairly. But that guy is going to be really, really good. It appears he basically has combined a lot of the positives that his father brought to the game. I mean, again, I went against his dad every day in practice for a while. Only he's combined it with elite level length and a little more speed. Really, really looked good. As did Becker and Myers. Becker and Myers looked terrific in this game. Becker, thing is, though, either of those guys could start at either corner without McFadden out there. McFadden's obviously going to be your starter on the boundary, but you know, with McFadden gone, which I expect him probably to leave early after this year, Becker will probably step into that boundary role, or could step into that boundary role. He's going to have to fight for it again because Stan Samuels is really good. But, or Stan Samuels the third, I'm sorry, I've got to remember, Boosie's junior. Thing you got to remember, that group, Becker and Myers, came in with Levante Taylor, and Taylor was the number one ranked corner in the country. Here's the real interesting thing. Taylor might be the third best corner out of that group. And he's got a lot of potential. He looked good. And the reports that I heard on Taylor coming out of spring were quite good. But he might be the third best receiver out of his class with Myers and Becker, who, you know, their length and their ability to get around the football, and Becker is a freak athlete. That's saying something. So that the future is very bright for that group of defensive backs. Number five, fifth quick observation. The backup defensive tackles at this point are solid, and that's Fred Jones and Wally Aimé. They're solid. They look good. And, you know, coming into the season, that group is one of the reasons that this defensive line is that there's a lot of optimism about this defensive line. But ultimately, I might have been able to see a little bit more penetration from that group. And I'm starting to wonder whether or not, you know, say a Darvin Taylor, who looked very impressive in this spring game, or a Marvin Wilson, if he comes in shape, maybe they push sooner than expected to get into that initial rotation, that rotation of four. And certainly I think you're going to have a little bit deeper rotation. You're not just going to see the top four defensive tackles play. You're going to see six at least play, which helps a lot in practice at any rate, and helps you stay free of as many nicks and bruises and so on as you get. But, you know, I think Darvin Taylor in particular may push for playing time, may push for more reps sooner rather than later, to where, again, Aimé and Fred Jones were good players last year. Jones, again, showed well in this one. Aimé looked good in this one. But I wonder whether or not a couple of those guys who are really third string on that depth chart, and again, once you get Wilson on campus as well, I'm wondering whether those guys might push that second group of defensive tackles maybe a little sooner than some expect. Number six, Trey McKitty is ahead of the curve. Now, I might actually like McKitty best as an edge rusher. I mean, he's a guy that kind of reminds me a little bit of Dante Fowler Jr. in terms of his body type. And that kind of explosion there. I mean, as an edge rusher, he might have the higher ceiling there than at tight end. But even at tight end, I think it was pretty clear he's ahead of the curve. Really terrific athlete. And again, one of those guys really thickly built in the lower half, and that's something you like to see. And I think he might already be ahead of Pops, ahead of Nasir Upshur at the tight end position. McKitty looked very good. Looked better. You know, he looked like he was underrated in terms of the recruiting rankings coming in. And so, you know, yet another really positive thing out of that group of early enrollees. Number seven, and this is the final quick hit from the spring game and from the spring in general. The punt returner role is going to be pretty interesting. You know, Florida State stuck Derwin James back there during the spring game. You got to wonder whether or not they're really going to stick with that during the season. He looked more comfortable catching it, certainly, than anybody FSU's had back there in the last couple of years with Bobo Wilson and Noonie Murray and some others that, you know, basically your heart's in your throat every time you watch those guys go to field a punt. Derwin looks comfortable, but again, live bullets aren't flying. And do you really want to potentially risk that injury on punt return to your best guy, your most valuable player? Well, you know, at the same point, he might be the best guy back there, but you got some other options. You know, Murray, again, if he learns how to, you know, use his head back there a little bit better, is another one. You know, Levante Taylor is another one that could be back there. You know, obviously the freshman coming in, there's an option or two that could come there. So I'm curious to see what they end up doing at that punt returner position. Are they going to go with Derwin, or are they going to go with some mix, or what are they going to do there? I think kick return, they've got some really interesting options. I think Rasul is probably one name to really watch there. Akers is also another name to watch there. They've got some guys that can really be a threat at that kick return spot. But I'm more interested in what they do on the punt return game. May not matter as much against Alabama because, you know, Bama's got such a quality punter that I'm not sure they're going to have much opportunity to return a whole lot. But it'll be interesting who trots out there for the punt return game and how they handle it. Well, that's going to do it for us here. I think that'll wrap up part two of the spring wrap up here. Not going to get into recruiting or anything else at the moment. I've got a few things to look into on that, and a few other pieces there before I address that more fully. But lots going on there. I do think, by the way, the kid that they just landed, name is just slipping my mind at the moment. Jashawn Corbin. I think that kid is way underrated from the film that I've seen. And again, talking to a few people who work in the industry down in Florida on that. Way underrated player, and this will be interesting. I mean, one of the main things I want to talk about in the next podcast is going to be how Jimbo Fisher and this staff recruit, and they're looking for not just good players that, you know, that plug into their system and good position players, but they're looking for football players and athletes, and this is one of those guys. They've been able to do a lot of that of late, and this is just yet another example of that. But lots to talk about in future episodes, but definitely need to get this one out. It's long enough already. So we'll go ahead and wrap here. Once again, this has been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio. Thanks for listening. I made this.